Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Veronique DeRougie of the Mercatus Center, who is my guide on American policy for the government and for the people, which is why I come to her with a special invitation to help me understand a new book, very popular, at 865 pages. I have the Kindle edition so I can talk and look at it at the same time, otherwise it'd break my lap. Industrial Policy for the United States, Winning the Competition for Good Jobs and High-Value Industries. Veronique, a very good evening to you. This is written by Mark Fasto and Ian Fletcher, who are described as professional commentators. At the same time, I'm learning industrial policy for the ages is a term of art that you economists all use routinely, but it's new to me. What is industrial policy? Is there one definition that's helpful to understand this 865-page book?
Well, good evening, John. I guess the best, most succinct way of talking about industrial policy is basically it's a government effort to shape the structure of a country's economy by favoring or propping up certain industry sector technology over other ones. So basically, it's pretty much it's pretty much like a bottom-up hands down, way of trying to restructure the economy in the way that the central planners like better than the one we have now. And the tools of industrial policies are many, but I guess they can be like they're broad categories. There's subsidies, tax break, you know, loan guaranteed type things for targeted industries. There are tariffs, quotas, all the protectionist game. There's maybe falls into that rule, so public procurement rules that favor like national champions and government direct investment into or ownership of companies, like taking shares of Intel, for instance, would be taking shares of some industries, or creating, or the government creating a consortium of semiconductors. That kind of is an industrial policy.
I read from the recommendations by Mr. Fasto and Mr. Fletcher that we're already in an industrial policy. We just didn't recognize it. They write, America has begun its return to industrial policy. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the CHIPS and Science Act passed in 21 and 22, with their related executive orders, were together the largest civilian industrial policy initiative since the Depression. Equally important is that they were explicitly described as industrial policy by the Biden administration and their supporters in both parties. Now, I paused at that point because it's all the Biden administration. Did they voice that they are taking America into an industrial policy? Not since the Great Depression have we seen one. Did they talk about it that way?
Yes, I think that's kind of mostly correct. I mean, even though it wasn't maybe talked about as much openly, I think there was a sense that they were trying to achieve something, like, for instance, bring back semiconductors. Well, actually, it's not bringing back, but actually kind of create an alternative to Taiwan for semiconductors in the U.S. I mean, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, was kind of seen as like an enormous investment in the production of green energy into the country. That kind of falls roughly into the industrial policy category. And of course, President Trump is very explicit about this. He wants to create a worker and manufacturing boom in America. He wants to reshape the supply chains. He wants to onshore industries. He wants to, you know, create a manufacturing boom and all of that.
The author's right. The industrial policies America needs fall into three broad categories: trade, technology development, and manufacturing at scale. They go on to say the U.S. should use tools such as tariffs and capital controls to protect key industries and balance over its overall trade. Now, I think I've been taught, I'm an amateur reader, that Adam Smith and his acolytes and his descendants recommend exactly another direction: not tariffs, not capital controls, and not protecting key industries. Instead, you go where the dollar is treated best. Have I been taught incorrectly about the United States?
No, you haven't. And I mean, it is quite amazing. It's like on one hand, you know, we have evidence that actually a really strong, have a strong economy. And I mean, it is, we are starting to see the consequences of the tariffs. And I actually think that we're going to see them more and more. But we have a really kind of, we have the best industrial policy we have, and it's in the private sector, and the economy is doing well. And it was fueled by actually a lot of trade and a lot of actually ingenuity. I mean, who in the world like produces tech companies like we do? Who in the world actually manufacturing, does advanced manufacturing like we do? Who in the world does a lot of what we do? Who in the world has the kind of unemployment rates that we have? Who in the world has the level of wealth per capita and income per capita that we have? No one. We actually have the best industrial policy, which is one of limited government and free trade. And so I'm always like baffled by this resurgence of industrial policy today. Well, when actually the system, while not perfect, has not failed us. But, you know, it is true that for those who have a dark vision of things and who want to change things radically, protectionism is always the first step.
More, it should fund basic and applied R&D at a percentage of GDP equal to or higher than rivals. I think that means that you subsidize the development of profit-making enterprises, or does it mean that the government takes the profits? Why should you subsidize something that doesn't make money? Why should we do that?
So the argument here is to say that actually public R&D is at plateaus or actually kind of collapsed in the last decades. And it's like, I mean, it's true, but the thing that is omitted is that meanwhile, private R&D is actually exploded. And I actually assume that it's going to continue to explode thanks to the One Big Beautiful Bill and the full expensing for R&D expenses. So it's kind of like a belief that is rooted in thinking somehow that private companies, the investment they make in R&D is lesser than what the government would do, that the government is able to actually pinpoint exactly what we should be researching, that it does it without having, you know, political pet projects and things like this. Now, of course, there are debate even among free market. Some free market people think that for the some form of R&D should be funded by the government. But it's this notion that there's no R&D in this country, or that actually the government can do R&D better than the public sector, is also in contradiction, by the way, since this is a message that is pushed also by this administration in some extent. It's kind of interesting because at the same time as they're doing this, they're talking about cutting all the R&D that is done in universities funded by government grants. But R&D funding by government grants is going to be taking place all the same in universities.
Veronique de Régis helping me through a hot new book at 865 pages. I'm John Batchelor.